Always Holding to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Tim Miller, John Curcio, Jazz at Maja, Chris Fuchs, Atif Sheik, Justin Maitner, Gavante Chillis, Molly Ficarella, Thomas Navin, Nathan McKenzie, Joe Mickendo, Trayvon Brady, Steve Rogers, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Adam Parker, Tom Gerke, and Eric Eels. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by visiting patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show. They ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week, I'm joined by Corey Moore. What's up, Corey?
Hey, Zach. Great to be on the podcast with you.
We are not related. Tell the listeners.
We're not related, although that would be cool. Brothers from another mother, something like that.
There it is. Yeah. So Corey's a longtime listener to the podcast. He has been very loyal in his listening and his feedback and his generous donations, such as, you know, certain memorabilia. Oftentimes I post the cool stuff Corey will send me. So Corey has been our number one fan for a long time, and I'm very happy to have him on the podcast this time. So welcome, Corey.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that introduction. That was great. Man, whew, I feel like a million bucks now.
So you specifically requested to talk about Spell for some reason. Do you want to spell that out for the listeners? Why are you here talking about this episode?
Well, early on, I noticed that you didn't like the Spell episode. And seasons ago, I was like, man, well, I kind of enjoyed Spell. So I'm going to send some emails to Zach and kind of poke fun at him a little bit. I mean, it wasn't that bad of an episode. It's kind of fun. And that's how it started. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I got to be on that episode. Whenever you get to that, that would be hilarious and fun. I've waited patiently.
Yeah, sorry. So let's talk about that. So as I said, you've been a longtime listener and contributor for in many aspects to the podcast. How did you find the show? And I guess even before that, how did you find Smallville? How did you become a fan of Smallville and thus started seeking out Smallville podcasts?
I was too young for the Superman movie to see it. You know, I was only like 1 year old when that movie came out, or just, I don't know how, when, you know. And so I only saw the Superman movie when I was in the 80s as a kid. And that started to kind of fuel my interest in Superman. And then fast forward to like when Smallville started, I didn't even know about it until my wife brought it up. She was, you know, watching the WB and she's watching her, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Dawson's Creek or whatever it was. And I believe she mentioned that there was a Superman show. And so we tuned into it, and it was the one with the lady that could see the future, the old lady.
Hourglass. Yeah.
Yeah. Hourglass. So that was, I believe, the first episode I watched. And then we would continue to record it. And since, you know, we watched it every episode till it finished, my wife and I. She enjoyed it. I think she more watched it because I liked it, you know, just, you know, something that couples do. They watch things together. And she started to appreciate it. I think she liked it a lot for Tom Welling.
I get it a lot from the ladies out there. Yeah. So you watched Smallville all the way to the end?
I did.
Good.
Yeah.
What did you think of the end, Corey?
Well, it's definitely a mixed bag, that's for sure. And some of the stuff that you have pointed out has made me like scratch my head and be like, you know, man, Zach's kind of right on some of that stuff. And you are really good at this podcasting, this reviews of each episode.
Well, thanks, man. unsolicited.
Yeah, let's let that sink in. But there's things that you point out that I am just shocked that I didn't realize before. And I've watched Smallville just, you know, a million times over and over and over. And I feel like in the past, a lot of my Smallville watching was and rating was kind of based on just kind of entertainment. You know, was the episode fun? Was, you know, did Clark do something cool? But you actually really get into the nitty gritty and break things down and get, you know, the characters' motivations and, you know, all that, the plots and all that stuff. Before your podcast started, I did a full letter grade of each episode. And so it's hilarious to refer back to that after, you know, listening to one of your reviews and, you know, you give it a different, you know, a little bit different grade than I do, or it's pretty close, you know, and so that's fun to refer to.
Corey sends me an email almost after every episode with some comments and then a rating. So is that where this rating comes from for this letter grade you've did? Yeah. Okay. I was wondering, yeah, it's like, okay, I got you. So you, this is like you ranked these well before and you're just pulling it back in. Okay. I was wondering where those came from, but that's cool to know. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's times after, your review where I'll kind of like change my rating. I'll be like, I'm like, man, he's right. I mean, this episode had either positive or negative, you know. I'll sometimes bump it up a plus or a minus or move it a full letter grade. So
yeah, I know we've done a lot of episodes so far, but we got a lot more to go. But are there anything that stuck out to you, like that we really did not agree on, where you thought we were way off in our, I mean, perhaps this one, but other than Spell so far, you know, I don't know if any come to mind or not.
Recently, there was one. I think it was Devoted. Do you remember what you gave Devoted?
Yeah, I think I gave it a D plus, or maybe just a D. I'm gonna look it up right now. But
yeah, exactly. That's the one, because I believe I gave it like, you know, a B plus or something. Or I mean, it says it in one of the emails that I sent you.
So you overall, do you like season four? You're a season four guy.
It is, like I said in an email to you a while back, season four was my highest rated season.
That's crazy talk. That's crazy talk right there. And by the way, C minus I gave Devoted, so we weren't that far off. So.
Okay, so I think I was somewhere like a B plus or something on Devoted.
Facade, I gave a D minus.
Yeah, so. That one. That one did have some problems.
That's cool, man. That to go through and rank them all. I mean, I've done that with like Star Trek before, because I'm a huge Star Trek guy as well. So I know what it's like to sit there and like, it's not that I try not to lose entertainment, because like you said, it is important to like, you watch something. How much did I enjoy this? Because it's entertainment. All right. But I do like, okay, if I'm going to have to rank these somehow, there have to be reasons. Like, why is this one better than the other? I don't know. So I find the letter grade scale a very good scale, because everybody understands what that is, you know?
Right.
Because I think if you do like, I don't know, like, because you could do a star system, like 4 out of 5 stars, or some people do 4 stars. So, like, 3 yeah. out of 4 stars. And then you say, okay, 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 5? Right? I don't know. It's just, I think letter grades, everybody has been in that system for their formative years and understands what that means when you get like a C minus or an A. So that's why I like the letter grades. And I guess you do too, because you did it even before you heard my podcast.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it really makes sense, because you can. Like an A, there's a difference between an A plus episode and an A minus episode.
So how did you find Always Will on Smallville?
You know, I listened to several podcasts, and I was just thinking there wasn't much going on with Smallville. I was like, there's got to be somebody talking about Smallville, because it's been over for a while now. And I just searched, you know, Smallville, and Always Hold on Smallville popped up, and you know, I clicked on it and I don't know how many episodes you were into by then, maybe like 5 or 6, 7, but I started at, you know, the pilot episode, and afterwards I was like, man, this guy's awesome. I'm sold on this podcast. I'm going to be listening to this every week.
Nice. Well, and I'll say this, that you are a stats guy. If I say like, oh man, I need to know how many times a car crashed, right? You're going to go look it up and find it. So I applaud you for that, Corey. So much kudos. And I believe I've mentioned that on air in the past. Like, I'm going to ask Corey more about this. He'll give me the stats. So I think you've done a good job with the stats so far. And we actually have a lot of tallies on this episode of Spill we'll talk about. So that'll be fun to discuss. So
yeah, we do have some boxes to check. Yeah. On that.
Well, cool, man. Well, that's your secret origin of your Smallville fandom and podcast fandom. So let's get into the episode discussion here. Spell, right? And I have here my handy Smallville, the Official Companion Season 4, available wherever books are sold, by Craig Byrne, friend of the show, and K-Site TV and Krypton Site webmaster.
Hey, check this out. I got mine too.
He's got it too. Oh wait, hold on. Okay, we got it. All right, hold that up. I got to take a picture of this. This is loud. I'm not even going to edit this out. So hold it up a little higher. All right, cool. We'll put that screenshot on the show this week, so you can see that we both have Smallville, this Official Companion Season 4, available wherever books are sold. I don't know when I started saying that. I think somebody asked me where you get that. Like, I think it was early on the podcast. I was like, I don't know. Available wherever books are sold, because that's what commercials used to say. You know, yeah. That's a joke, guys. So I know it's not. It's hard to find. All right, you need to go on like eBay, or you know, somewhere like Amazon. Occasionally gets some, but from third party sellers. So yeah. I've seen these sometimes at Half Price Books. I love going there. Brick and mortar stores, you know, they don't really carry these anymore because there really aren't any brick and mortar stores anymore. They're like Barnes and Noble or something. So
yeah, I bought mine from mycomicshop.com. In Texas. So.
Oh, Texas! What up? Yeah. Represent. So, Lone Star State. But anyway, in Smallville, the Official Companion Season 4 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, writer Stephen DeKnight. That's right. Stephen S. DeKnight wrote this episode, folks. He said, "The whole witch storyline is a tricky bit of business. You walk a fine line. We wanted to, again, this is basically from the comics, layer in more of the Superman myth, and one of my favorite parts of the myth is that he's vulnerable to magic. That's one of his few weaknesses. We were interested in bringing up this part of the myth, that magic is one of his weaknesses besides kryptonite. Because Superman is so powerful, how do you weaken him? But in doing so, the tricky thing is that magic and Smallville is a very odd mix. It was very tricky to try to get it to mesh together correctly." So that's his quote about it. I find it interesting. This episode came after Jinx, which is like the same thing. Like a lot of the things they do in this episode, Mixoplex did in the last episode, didn't he, Corey?
Yeah, and I kind of put a question mark by that in this episode. It almost seemed like Clark was surprised that there was magic.
Yeah, and it's what do you call last week?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know, continuity. I don't know, continuity fail maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been, and like, because I didn't. I mean, spoilers. I'm not the big fan of this episode, so it's like if you get rid of all the witches stuff, you could have like Mr. Mixpitalik come look for these stones and do the same stuff. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there, right? Yeah. A two-parter, right? But anyway, Alfred Goff also had some words to say about this episode. He said, quote, "The Isabel witch story was just going to be the one episode, Spell. And then we ended up making Isabel a bigger part of the overall crystal story. The idea being that several hundred years ago, she'd been on this crystal hunt. I think that the whole Lana witch element is the point where the crystal story went off the rails and we just got a little hokey. And something led to a great conclusion with the fortress and the season finale with the second meteor shower. Spoilers. But it was interesting. After a while, we just felt like the tires were a bit stuck in the mud." And yeah, I agree. I think that's really interesting that they thought that this was going to be it.
Yeah, really. I was surprised when I read that also. It's like, wow, just one off episode.
Well, I think this is the 8th episode of the season, right? So I'm thinking like, okay, this is little, you know how Smallville has done this. They have those little sub things that they kind of wrap up in half seasons, and they thought, okay, like Green Arrow, right? Green Arrow was here for first half of season 6 and he was gone. And they're like, okay, we're going to do this Lana tattoo thing. And then it became something bigger. I think a big reason of that was Christopher Reeve passed away. and they didn't know what they were going to do with the crystals. And that's when they brought in Jane Seymour, you know, and that whole thing, and Jason's whole character change. And I think that was all connected to that, unfortunately, an unfortunate side effect. So that's why, you know, in retrospect, I give season 4 a little more slack because they were dealing with stuff that was beyond their control. And they were just trying to, having to, you know, fly by the seat of their pants, right? So, but some other behind the scenes stuff this episode is, Corey, I don't know if you noticed on the DVDs, you probably did, but there were 3 deleted scenes.
You know, I didn't watch the deleted scenes recently, but I have in the past, so I don't even remember, you know, what they were.
Well, you know, when there's only like one and sometimes two, I try to like, I'll bring them up when they're supposed to happen, but there's 3 of them. So we're going to get them out of the way now. That's what I've been doing. So before we jump into the episode proper. So there's 3 deleted scenes. The first deleted scene is Clark getting Martha ready. Martha and Jonathan are going on some vacation. That explains why they're not here for the party and stuff. And she's talking to him and stuff. And this is, I loved, it brought something up I was going to complain about in the episode. And it's Clark's all like, oh, yeah, I got to meet this guy from Princeton or whatever. I'm like, you have a full ride to met you. We found out in the last episode. Why do you care?
Right? Man, that's right.
And Clark even says that to his mom, though, right, in this deleted scene. He's like, I don't see what the big deal is. I have a full ride at MAU. And she's like, yeah, but Princeton is Ivy League and all this stuff. So it really sets up, you know, the stakes of that. Also, that his parents are gone. Because it's weird. It's like some throwaway line in the middle of the episode. Oh, well, you know, mom and dad are gone or something. And it's like, okay. So I get why they cut it, because, I mean, you don't need it, but it was helpful. And it fixed that plot hole for me where I was annoyed. Like, obviously, they didn't read their script from last week.
Right.
Because he got a full ride to Princeton, or full ride to Metropolis U. And it's interesting, the scene ends right when Lois pulls up. So it's like Martha drives off, Clark walks into the barn, and then Lois pulls up. So you actually see the beginning, the Lois scene, at the end of this one. So it would have been the first scene after the opening credits. So that was interesting. And to give Annette O'Toole some more screen time, because the kids obviously weren't in this episode very much.
Basically at the end, yeah.
Yeah, that's their only scene there at the end. Yeah. And then the second deleted scene is at the torch, right? And it's Clark and Lois giving Chloe her birthday present. Because, you know, remember when Clark, he wrapped this terrible present.
Right.
And it's like, God, he's terrible at wrapping paper. We'll talk about that when we get there, right? But I didn't think about it watching the episode. I was like, oh, yeah, Chloe never got to open her present.
Yeah.
And so it's Lois and Chloe and Clark. Because, yeah, after Lois and Chloe, and because we get a lot of scenes with Lana wrapping up, but, like, none with Lois and Chloe. I'm like, oh, well, yeah. Okay, I guess Lois is gone again, and Chloe, whatever, it's like your 18th birthday. And she even jokes about it. She's like, oh, this is the best 18th birthday party I'll never remember or something. You know, so I thought right. It was pretty funny. Because that sucks. I mean, you turned 18, and you didn't remember your birthday party. Poor Chloe. No respect for Chloe ever, the show gives her. But they gave her a typewriter, for the same one that Nellie Bly used to write on, her journalism idol, which they talked about in Gone. So that was some cool continuity there. And it was nice to see people do something nice for Chloe, because that doesn't happen enough on the show. But again, these scenes with, like, these are helpful scenes.
They are. Yeah, they would have really helped out a lot.
I don't know why this started in season 4, but this tracks back to the very first episode where they see all these scenes that are helpful and that are good character stuff, and they just delete them. And I don't know what else they could have cut out of this episode, because usually what they do is they time out, they read the episode, they time it all out before they film it, so they know what to cut. And I mean, like, write a shorter script. I don't know what the answer is.
They probably could have deleted the episode the morning that Clark wakes up after the witches and the party at the barn, and the cell phone rings, and then, like, the two kids, like, wake up and run out of the barn.
That is an excellent point. That is, well,
he was talking to Martha at the time and said something about the Princeton alumni, and, oh, I think I made an impression on him. I think that's what he said.
That was a funny line, but you're right. That's precious screen time we could have used for one of these other scenes. Because the third one, though, and this third one, like, I'm fine with him not being in there, but I understand why it was shot and written, is Jason and Lana kind of patching things up, you know, after. He's like, oh, did I really do that to you? I'm sorry. He's like, oh, it wasn't you, it was Isabel. So we established that they're cool, which is important, right? Because they always delete these scenes, though. I think it was like in Devoted, the same deal. There was a deleted scene with oh, I'm sorry I did this, oh, it's okay, and all that. It was the same thing.
Yeah.
But with the two of them, and yeah, they're the first thing to drop. I get it. But at the same time, she is her girlfriend. They're in a relationship.
Yeah.
I'm getting tongue-tied here. And for them to go through all that, they kind of had some tension. It would be nice to have some resolution there, and that's what that scene was. So it was really short, though.
Yeah.
But that it takes place right before Lex shows up, because Lana's cleaning up the talent. So it's one of these classic Smallville, like, one character stays in one set, one actor comes in, they have the conversation, you switch them out for the next one. So anyway, those are your three deleted scenes. And I think of the three, Chloe opening her birthday present and us acknowledging the fact that, oh, Chloe's 18th birthday party got ruined and she doesn't remember it, would have been worth remembering.
Yeah, exactly. 18's a big birthday, too. 16, 18, 21.
I don't remember what I did for my 18th birthday. I think I went to a baseball game. I usually do that when the Astros are in town for my birthday. So, hey, but that establishes that Chloe turned 18 right now. Okay. Lana, although she claimed she was 18, I don't know. I don't think she was 18 when she met Jason. That's its own conversation, though. So, anyway, there you have it. There's your pregame discussion here. We talked some Corey. We talked some deleted scenes. So let's get into it. Spell.
Clark? You all right? What happened? Did Lana do this to you? Take it easy, take it easy. Where is she? I need to find her.
She's with Lois and Chloe, but they're different. They're not themselves. It's like their bodies have been taken over.
They have. In fact, this is going to sound kind of out there. Let's get you. Lana has been researching a 17th century witch. She tracked down her spell book, and when she touched her hand
Wait
to the page...
Wait a second. Lana's been possessed by the spirit of an evil witch.
Yes. Isabel got into Lana by using the book. So we got to find her and destroy the book. Any idea where they went?
I'm not sure. Why don't you check the school? I'll go to the Talon.
All right. Clark, call myself. Find him, okay? Don't try anything alone. Just be careful, okay?
Spell is the 8th episode of Smallville's 4th season, aired on November 10th, 2004, written by Stephen S. DeKnight and directed by Jeno Swark. Now, Stephen S. DeKnight, he wrote Run already this season. He goes on to write a lot of great Smallville episodes and a lot of not great Smallville episodes. He's very hit or miss. I mean, he wrote Ageless. Don't tell me you like Ageless.
Oh, actually, no. That one, okay. That one's one of my lowest rated, okay. Actually.
But anyway, Jeno Swark, he's been on Smallville directing. He directed Perry, many episodes of Smallville. He directed Past, This Point, Future. Also directed Supergirl, the movie, Jaws 2, So this guy's he's in the Superman family, and he directed movies in the 80s. So he's legit.
Definitely legit.
I'll say this. I have many complaints about this episode. The direction is not one of them. I think the direction was fine.
Yeah, there was a few cinematography choices that were really nice. When Jason grabs the spell book and Lana gets a little angry with him and uses magic, takes the book from him because he was going to light it on fire. There was some cool angle choices that they did with the camera, and they kind of swooped up and down and to the side, gave it a real, really tell that there was like some witchcraft going on there. So it was cool.
So the episode starts out and we get the biggest super I've ever seen on the show. It says France 1604. I'm like, whoa, did the font need to be that big? We get it. Okay.
Yeah.
And we see who is clearly Kristen Couric. In a cage, some kind of wagon. It's supposed to be some reveal. And oh my God, it's Kristen Couric, right? It's like
I knew right away, yeah, that it was Lana. Once you hear her voice, you're like, there's this woman in a cape, but it's obviously Lana. So
yeah, and she's with two other girls, and the two other girls look period appropriate, like they're kind of in clothes of that time. They're kind of dirty, because they're in a jail wagon, whatever you want to call it, and they're getting carted, as we find out, they're being carted off to their execution. The Lana character, or Isabel, the Countess Isabel Thoreau, right? She's wearing this velvet red cape and hood. You're like, okay, this sticks out to me, and this is kind of anachronous. So
yeah, why? Or are they just showing it? Why was she so fancy with that? Was it just because she's related to
Countess? maybe that's why.
Okay, I was thinking maybe they were just tying it in because it's Superman, give her a red cape or a red hood or whatever.
They probably just had that laying around in that was the traveler's cape from Slumber.
Yeah.
she's doing the Darth Sidious thing this whole time. We don't see her face, but we know who she is, right? They show up, the door's open, they get the three girls out, and it's a public burning to be burned at the stake because these are witches, you know. And it's like, look how backward we were. I'm like, okay, burning people at the stake claim to be witches, that's bad stuff. Salem witch trials, it's bad. Here's the problem. These are witches. Like the people in this episode are using magic in a bad way. So they deserve, I mean, not that they deserve to die. I'm just saying, like, they are, because people say the witch trials are BS and stuff. Well, these were witches. So they actually got it right at least once, right?
Yeah. And what did you think of it being 400 years ago and stone related? I mean, that really complicates things.
Yeah, because the stones are already on Earth at that point, which is why I don't like this whole plot line, right? I like Jor-El gives Kal-El a crystal.
Yeah.
Right? I don't care if it's whatever it is, right? There's many versions of this, but like one thing, keep it simple. Spaceship crashes, he gets to a certain age, it calls to him, he throws it somewhere, it builds the fortress. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. Now, all this stuff that's Kryptonian existing before Krypton even explodes, centuries before Krypton even explodes, is suspect to me. And I don't even know if they thought it out.
I don't think they did. It really complicates things. I mean, you think back to 1961 episode, you know, right. Relic, and, you know, Jor-El was, you know, on Earth. And
well, even that's less egregious than this, because like, okay, I will allow that Kryptonians had portals to come here. That's how they knew about Earth. Like, that's a stretch.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, it doesn't really screw up any real continuity. Yeah. But it's like, now you're telling me that, like, not only, and by the way, Kryptonite apparently existed before Krypton exploded because of skinwalkers and stuff. That's kind of a problem. And Zor-El knows, again, way ahead, but right? Zor-El knows about Kryptonite and all the colors and what they do before Krypton explodes. That's kind of a problem. And now you're telling me that the things that were going to build the Fortress of Solitude were here centuries before, because it's supposed to be meant for Clark.
Right.
Not anybody. So how does Jor-El's AI even get in there?
Yeah.
Like, what was it going to be if not Jor-El? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it's... So, it yes.
It knocks down this this episode at least a letter grade. Definitely.
All right, we're off to a good start. We're off to a good start. So Isabel is up at there. She's not really concerned about this because the guy that's burning at the stake wants to know about the Stones of Power. So apparently everybody knows about these Stones of Power. She's like, oh, bring me my book. And then she like spits blood on the page of the transference symbol, casts some spell, some magic words. And then she's like, my heir will reawaken me and I will have my revenge, right? And this is not a compliment, but I will say it did remind me of Superman, the movie, and Superman 2, because you got the main villain and the other two, and they're getting banished. She's like, I will have my revenge! Like, it's like Zod or something, right? The beginning of Superman, the movie.
Yeah.
You will bow down before me! Because she's just yelling and laughing, you know, because they're being burned at the stake. Not Kristen Kirk's best acting either, I think. It's kind of cheesy. A lot cheesy to me.
I have to admit, I like her witch cackle. It's pretty good. Like, I don't remember if she does she do it right here at the burning at the
yeah. Like, I think it's when they do the transition from the past to the present.
Okay.
She's like, or yeah. Whatever it is, I can't even do it. But then we kind of go through the flames to like the fireplace at the Talon, which okay, that's a cool transition, I guess. I'll give you credit. They're generous work. So
yeah, that was cool. Yeah, the witch cackle I do like, and but it's not the best in the episode. The best witch cackle goes to Chloe later on. Chloe gives a good one when she's...
No, like, I know and exactly what you're talking about. That is a good one. So we transition out of the 1600s and into the 21st century. And Lana and Jason, and what is Lana wearing here, by the way, Corey?
She's got to show her tattoo off.
Yeah, this is like the front of a towel, I think, and that's all that she's wearing, right? But she says that she found this book on eBay, and it called to her, and she maxed out her credit card to get it, which is, all these things are just so amusing to me to hear these characters say.
I wonder what her credit card limit was to max it out.
Yeah, for a high schooler who is running a coffee shop, that's got to be, you got to have some weird credit scores, I think. I assume there's a lot of loans that have been taken out. Not to mention she just paid for some school in Paris. So who knows what her credit limit is?
Yeah, but she has like a credit limit of like 800.
Yeah, but how expensive is this book? It's like, wait, $12,000 book? You just maxed out your credit card? I don't know. They're opening it, and of course she opens it and is turning through it, and we get to the page with the transference symbol, and she touches it. Right? And I guess I think to myself, would I do this? Yeah, I guess I would touch it, because she has no reason to think she's going to get possessed by touching it.
Right.
But it looks like a coffee stain, because it's like 100-year-old blood, and she touches it, and the book glows, and then we get the purple. Purple is like the sign of magic, apparently, with these witches. So, like, her eyes turn purple, and the fire gets real big, and Jason gets blown back, and we have a plus one for possession, because it's not Lana anymore, it's the Countess Thoreau, isn't it, Corey?
Yeah, it's what I like to refer to as Lana Witch.
She's Lana Witch.
Lana Witch.
With an exclamation point, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, we have the cliche like, oh, Lana, are you okay? She's like, oh, I've never felt better in my life. Like, if anyone ever tells you that, it's not, they've been possessed. Like, something's wrong. So just be wary, listeners. If anyone ever tells you they never felt better. I think it's, did Lionel not say that as Clark in, like, Transference? Like, oh, never felt better. Right, yeah, that's what people say, and you've taken over other people's bodies, right? So then we cut the opening credits, we come back, and this is where that deleted Martha scene would have been. That's gone, and we pick up halfway through, and it's Clark in the barn, and then Lois pulls up, like, oh, Lois is back. So what do you think about Lois coming back to the show, Corey?
Well, I'm always excited when Lois comes back to the show. She's was excellent addition to the, you know, to the Smallville TV show. But this was the scene where it would, I don't know if you caught it, but it almost could have used a reshoot, because Lois shows up and she comes out, you know, they're talking about you know, setting up for Chloe's party.
I did like the dialogue though, where she's like, yeah, the party, remember? And Clark's like, I remember telling you you couldn't have it here.
Yeah.
Like, that was funny.
Well, the reason for the reshoot is because it's something minor, but it's just something that stuck out, is she hands Clark one box and then she hands him a second box. But then there's a cutaway and a cutback, and Clark has one box and he says something, cuts back again, and then the two boxes are back in his hands.
Classic continuity mistake.
Yeah. Did you pick up on that?
I did not pick up on that. That's good either, Corey. I did not notice that. And, you know, probably what that is they probably did a few takes and they used a combination of the different takes, and they just, whoever the continuity director is for this episode, you done messed up.
So. Maybe he's just like crossing his fingers. And he's like, oh, hopefully nobody notices. You know, we need this specific line that Clark says, whatever he says. He's like, really? Or,
well, 15 years later, we noticed it, Corey. So joke's on them. But so it's... You know, Lois wants to throw this 18th birthday party. It's a surprise party for Chloe. Now, I think I've talked about surprise parties before on the podcast, I believe, and surprise. I've never had a surprise party thrown for me. I don't know if I would like one or not. I have thrown them in the past to various successes. Sometimes they've been spoiled by friends who are just being, like, just absentmindedly being stupid. And other times they've been successful. So surprise parties, you know, they're always hit or miss. So what's your experience with surprise parties, Corey?
You know, I have never had one thrown, I believe, for me. And I don't think I have either. Yeah, I don't think I've thrown a surprise. I mean, I really would have to think about it. Maybe with my wife, but I don't know. I mean, we've, you know, once you've been married as long as I do, you kind of start to forget about all those. Birthdays. Maybe we did one for our kids. I don't know.
There you go. Well, now you got an idea. Throw a surprise party for one of your children. We establish again that somebody from Princeton is coming, you know, and he's going to be there. And Lois is like, it's not going to be like Sodom and Gomorrah, which is funny because that's exactly what that's exactly what it turns into. So this is amusing. Okay, like I give them credit. There's a lot of I was amused throughout most of this episode. Yeah. So I will give it that. It didn't make me smile. Yeah,
it's fun. It has some fun stuff to it.
Speaking of. We have Isabel. She's concocting a potion, and I will take a screenshot of this. We do see one kind of tight shot of what the potion is. I will take a screenshot of it and post it on the social media. But she, you know, she's getting a a potion to resurrect her two friends. And because she had promised him, oh, we're all going to live again and whatever. So, which is cool, you know, friendship goals, right? That's cool. You know, if I was a henchman to an evil witch and we all died, I would want her to fulfill her promise and resurrect me as well. So, so at least, if nothing else, Isabel's a good friend, I guess,
she,
right, Corey?
That's true. She is a good friend.
She needs some a certain list of items, right? And the hair of two virgins is what she needs. So this, again, this was pretty funny where she kind of plucks her own hair. She's like, oh, you've been a good little girl, right, haven't you? So Lana is a virgin, which is good because Jason is an adult and she is not. So at least Smallville, at least it's not going there.
They figured we gotta clear this up so we don't have to like take Jason to jail.
I kid you not. I wonder if that crossed somebody's mind.
Yeah,
you know,
I could totally see them in the writer's room, you know, with this big list of to-dos, and this was probably one of the big ones that they had to check off and make sure and clear up.
So that's Jason is in the clear, and so then Lois and Chloe show up, and then they come upstairs, and then Lois has to like have some excuse for Chloe to go back out to her car, and she's like, Lana, what the hell? We're supposed to be preparing for the party. And while they're talking, it's funny. I thought to myself, oh, another Lana and Lois scene, but it's not even really Lana. It's Isabel. So yeah. You know, they don't have many. Lana and Lois just don't have many scenes together as characters. But while this is going on, you know, Lana pulls a hair from Lois's head, and she's like, ah, what was that? And she's like, oh, well, this is no good. It won't do. And that totally tracks for me that Lois, you know.
Well, to be fair, Lois, she's like, oh, well, it's no good now that you pulled it out.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. And then she explains, Isabel's quick on her feet. You know, she's like, oh, it was gray.
I don't have gray hair.
But she immediately goes to the bathroom to go check. She doesn't have gray hair. But I love that. That was like, okay, that's cute. Lois, you know, living the college life, whatever she's doing, it met you, right? I believe that.
Yeah.
Isabel's going along pretty, she's going with the flow pretty good, right? To just be in somebody's body without a clue. But we find out way later in the episode that they have the memories of their hosts. She tells her friends that. It would have been nice to get that established now, because I'm thinking, like, how did she know to go to Clark's house?
Exactly.
Because next thing she goes to the Kents, and what does she do there, Corey?
Yeah, so she comes across Clark wrapping terribly a present that's...
This is the worst wrapping job I've ever seen. Like that's just too far. It's like, it's one thing to be bad, but that's atrocious. Atrocious wrapping job, Clark.
And it was just funny. He, like, just slaps a bow on top, and he was just kind of... All right, this'll do. But I like it that she's going there to use some scissors to get some of his hair. She's hoping that he's a virgin, so it'll complete her potion.
But you're telling me that Lois's hair won't work because she's not a virgin, but Clark's Kryptonian hair will.
Like, hey,
what kind of spell book is this?
If you're a virgin on Earth or on Krypton, it doesn't matter.
There you go. I guess not. So yeah, because I really like the she tries to pluck it. She tries to snip some of his hair off, and the scissors break, and that's great. That's what would happen.
Yeah, it was good sound effects too. It really sounded like these scissors just kind of malfunctioned. And
again, Isabel quicker on her feet. Clark's like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, oh, I need some of your hair for a scrapbook for Chloe's party. I'm like, she came with excuses, so good for her. And he's like, we should have just asked. And he pulls out his own hair.
Yeah.
It's a nice effect there. It's I love the effortlessness stuff of Superman where the scissors won't do it, but he pulled it right out, and now she's good to go. So, and Clark is a virgin too, so thumbs up, Clark, for living the pure life.
Yeah.
So, again, though, I just can't get over the fact that Clark's alien DNA works better than Lois's would, right?
Yeah, now that you bring that up, maybe the alien DNA would maybe spike the potion, you know, that she's making, and, you know, maybe they could have played around with that a little bit.
Well, you know, magic does affect him, right? That was the whole point of this episode, to establish that. So that, I guess that all goes across the board at all. We're going with it, right? But then we cut to Lex, and he's playing piano. And through the power of editing, it looks like Michael Rosenbaum's playing piano, right? Because you start keep an eye out for this. Any movie or TV show where someone's playing piano, they usually start at the hands and they'll do like a 360 camera around the back, and they'll do a cut when they're twisting around the back when the camera's in black, and we'll cut to Rosenbaum's face. Notice you never see Rosenbaum in his hands at the same time playing the piano, right?
Oh, I was fooled. I totally thought, when I first saw this, I thought Michael Rosenbaum was a savant piano.
Well, you know, they've had that piano there like in the Luther Library for a long time. I've only seen like Lionel play it, and then Adam Knight, I think, too. Yeah. I don't remember Lex playing it before now.
Yeah, good question. This might be the first time we've seen him.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just something that stuck out to me because I'm like, oh, this prop's been here. It's finally Lex is using it properly. But so Lana Isabel, right, comes to ask Lex for a bottle of wine, right? Because they need some wine. I guess it's on the list, right? She's like oddly specific. She's like, oh, something from the south of France. And Lex is just clueless. She's like, oh, I guess the summer in Paris really changed your taste. I also like what Lex said. He's like, she's not turning 21, is she? Right. Like, you know, Lex Luthor cares about why he's getting teachers fired for having inappropriate relationships, not giving alcohol to kids. Like, you know, Lex Luthor, the only guy with morals in this town, Corey, let me tell you.
Well, he was going to just give him a light Riesling, you know, that wouldn't do too much harm.
Yeah, that's his justification, right?
Yeah.
But while he's down in the wine cellar, which we don't get to see till later this season, right? But I guess it's established here that wine cellar's right down the hall. Isabel sees the map from Run, and she's like, what is this? You seek the stones. Like, she kind of gives up her facade as Lana at this point.
She couldn't control it. She just she went evil right away.
Yeah. And what does she do to the map?
Exactly. She just kind of makes it disappear, but where did it go?
Yeah, like, I was thinking to myself, like, oh, is it going to come back? Because, I don't revisit season 4 very much, so I don't remember a lot of the finer details of this season like I do other seasons. Yeah. I don't know when the map comes back. Obviously, Lex would have had it scanned, and it's not like the end of the world.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten it just was destroyed here. Like, why would she just, if she needs to find the stones, why would she destroy the map?
I almost feel like she put it in a secret spot where she could, you know, go get it later, but it's never, as far as I can, you know, remember, I don't ever really remember where we next see it. I mean, it'll be good.
It would have been sacred, I think. So we'll keep an eye open whenever I goes to China. We'll keep our eye open for the map. But I was like, oh wow, the map's gone. And then she has Lex like freeze, right? And then makes him go play piano nonstop. And it's like, I guess they really did just copy stuff from last week, because I remember watching Jinx for the podcast. And I was like, oh, where's the scene where he makes Lex play the piano until his fingers bleed? I was like, oh, that's next week. But, you know, you can see how I get those confused, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Both magic.
Yeah, it's like the same stuff. And they're, as you said, like, it's weird. Clark's like, Dad, magic's real. It's like, well, yeah, magic was here last week in Smallville.
Right.
Like, but it's just weird. They never made that connection of, like, this is like the season of magic. You have like Superman's number one magic enemy.
Yeah.
And they draw no connection between them. So I think that's a really missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Lana, or Isabel, has called Lois and Chloe out to the woods. It's funny because Lana kind of spoils the party. Again, this has happened to me before. I had a surprise party I was going to throw for Lance, and we had a third friend in the car, and he totally spoiled it.
Oh,
no. Like, hey, okay, yeah, because he was like, hey, so-and-so can't come to the party. I keep trying to talk over him and, like, you know, shut him up or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then Lance just sitting there, I'm like, and he wouldn't stop. He's like, oh, did you hear me? I told you so-and-so said he can't come to the party. I'm like, wait, are you an idiot? Like, this is a surprise party. He's like, oh, I didn't know it was a surprise party. Didn't know it was a surprise party. Anyway.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So anyway, just want to get that out of my system here. But something similar happens.
Yeah.
Happens to Lana and Chloe and Lois here, because they run up and Isabel's like, oh, I want to do this before the party. Chloe's like, what party? And Lois is like, oh, thanks a lot. But Chloe's like, oh, you mean the one you've been planning for me for a month? Hello, investigative reporter. So I thought that was funny that Chloe would have picked up on that.
Yeah, that was good writing, because Chloe would have, she would have been the type to find out about a surprise party and Clark's secret.
Yeah.
being shown to her.
Right? That's the thing, right? It's like, yeah, Chloe will figure it out one day. Oh, we're just going to show it to her. Oh. Oh, okay.
Yeah, wouldn't that have been awesome if she was, you know, found Clark's secret out on her own? That would have been much more, you know, in with her character and build her character more, be more strong.
Well, it just makes more sense, because it's like, she's the investigative one. She spent more time around all this weird stuff than anyone. She would figure it out. Of all the people that just have to be told, right, she would figure it out. But instead, she just, again, like everybody else, somebody has to spell it out for her. But we'll get there soon enough this season, won't we? So Isabel has concocted this potion. She plays it off to the other girls. She's like, oh, we're just going to, you know, have some wine before the big party. And Lois is like, all right, it's getting better. So, of course, Lois. God, Lois, right? They chuck this wine.
In my notes, I said the girls drink this like it's Kool-Aid. They're just guzzling it. And I mean, have you ever tried to guzzle wine? It's like impossible.
I did, and I threw up all over the place. Yeah. It was disgusting. We were filled with something at a studio one night, and we're like, we're gonna finish this wine. And I'm like, I'm gonna chug it. You know, I'll chug it. And then I threw up all over the outside of the studio afterward. There are pictures that exist out there somewhere. I need to track those down before they become digitized. But you cannot. Especially red wine.
Yeah.
Oh. So you cannot chug this stuff.
I mean, it like burns your neck, your throat, burns your ears, you know, your nose. I mean, you gotta sip wine. They're just drinking it like it's Kool-Aid. It was just amazing. It was hilarious.
Yeah, that's unintentionally just funny.
Yeah.
So then we get like, I don't know, there's like some kind of lightning or whatever, right? But then we get the same kind of, you know, possession effect we got before with Isabel and Lana. So we have another plus two for possession.
Yeah.
Which brings us to three so far in the episode. Isabel's two friends are now Lois and Chloe. Again, it's amusing, right? This episode where Lois is like, I'm gorgeous. Look at these. And she's like talking about her breasts. Yeah. And then Isabel's like, yes, those are very nice.
Well, this is where I put in my notes, Zach might, start thinking this is season four trash, because there's a lot of, I mean, there's not a shower scene in this episode, but there's a lot of skin. And then, you know, the reference that you just made with Lois, and I mean, it is funny, but I was thinking maybe you had thought that this was the start of some trash.
I mean, it is thirsty, as I think that's the terminology we're going to start using. Right. But it's amusing. I don't know why I put this in a different category than like Facade or something, but I do. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean this definitely was a little particular scene is definitely a little less. You know, it's not too bad, but it's just, you know, getting nothing like Devoted or a Facade and stuff like that. So.
Well, but here I feel like we're in an episode of Charmed all of a sudden, because we got these three witches. I've never watched Charmed. Isn't that what Charmed? I don't think three witches. I don't even know.
Yeah, I remember catching a few episodes of Charmed with my wife, and yeah, there's three witches.
Like if you're watching the WB this night, you'd be like, you wouldn't know what show you're watching. Like back in 2004, like what is this Charmed? Is it Smallville? What is it? Right. But this is where Isabel tells her friends that you have your host's memories, so use them to navigate this world. I'm like, oh, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been nice to somehow establish that, you know, in the first 20 minutes of the episode, but so be it.
Well, one thing that stuck out with this in the background, I was wondering if that was the bridge from the pilot episode. I was trying to, you know, kind of look way past the girls and see if that was the same bridge. I couldn't quite tell, but did you notice that at all?
You know, I'm kind of desensitized now to the bridges in Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like the same three outdoor locations, especially we were talking about earlier where Clark catches the car when Alicia takes Chloe. Mm-hmm. That thing, I know that's not what you're talking about, but like that thing is like in so many episodes, it's distracting to me. But the bridge, I'm like, okay, that could be a different bridge, I guess. Like, you know, there could be a few lakes and, like, lakes, but rivers and bayous and stuff like that. So, but I'm sure in the real world of like Vancouver, I'm sure that was the same bridge, Corey. So,
could be, yeah, because like a while back, I visited the farm, the Kent farm that they used there in Langley, and we visited the Talon, the coffee shop that they have there.
So is there a coffee shop in there?
Well, when we visited it, it wasn't a coffee shop. It was a church, and it, like on the sign, it said like worship on Sunday at, you know, whatever, 8 a.m. Come visit.
And the movie theater part of the Talon, right?
Exactly. Yeah, probably. But it was really cool to actually visit the Kent farm, and you get a visual of kind of how everything looks. And I mean, you could be in there, you could tell where north, east, south, and west was. And so there's certain episodes where in Smallville where there'll be you know, like the sun setting in the west. So it technically, you know, was like the evening, but they're shooting a morning episode. You know, they're...
Oh, so you're looking at the shadows. You're like, oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's like, actually, it's not the daytime. You know, it's actually the evening. And I mean, if that makes sense, I don't know if I...
No, that makes total sense. Yeah, because they want the dusk look or the sunrise look. They shoot it at dusk and vice versa. So
yeah.
But you know, that's a great point, though. Why don't you talk for a minute about it? And I posted these on the social media way back. Maybe I'll repost them so everybody can see. Talk about when y'all went and visited the Kent Farm, because that's really cool.
This was probably about 3 years ago. And we went there to visit all the sites, and it was just a lot of fun to first, you know, approach the farm. You know, you could see a lot of the roads where they do some of the shooting. You know, you can be like, oh, I was right there, and you know, you can see the cross streets. Or in the Perry episode, you know, Clark throws the tractor and it lands at an intersection, and I feel like we drove past that intersection. But yeah, we made the rounds to the town and the Kent farm. And when we got to the Kent farm, there was we set up our tripod and camera that way we could go stand in front of the ranch style gate that they have there on the Kent farm. And while we were taking pictures, you know, with the family, the owner of the house came out and he said, he's like, oh, you must be Smallville fans. And, you know, so we said, sure. Yeah, definitely. And he said, well, why don't you pull your car around the other side of the driveway, park, and, you know, walk around and, you know, look around and take pictures. He said, we're, you know, just having a wine party on the porch. And this guy, he was so nice. And another memory of him that I thought was he looked like George Bush, the president. He was like the Canadian version of George Bush. It was they were just real friendly, and we walked around, took pictures of the barn, of the home, and I mean, I really took a lot of inspiration from this visit, because we about 6 months ago. 7 months ago, we sold our home in town and moved to the country. And so once we got to our home, you know, we bought a home that's on 10 acres and has a barn. And but at the start of the driveway, there was no, you know, ranch style gate. And so my wife and I built a 20-foot ranch style gate, you know, with 20-foot posts and a cross beam with a sign. And you know, so being at that Kent farm really gave us a lot of inspiration for stuff. And we haven't engraved on our sign, but when we do, it'll say the Moore farm.
Nice. It's a good name. I like it. I approve.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, man. You know, and so, yeah, I'll share those pictures again on the social media, because you were so gracious to send them to me. It looks like you guys had a great time out there. It's so cool to see, like, hey, people there that I know, they're at the Kent farm. That's great. So, and the Kent farm in quotations, right?
Oh, one last thing. The owner of that Kent farm at the time, he said that he had people from all over the world visit. He said the week before we were there, there's people from Japan or China, you know, some Asian country. And just amazing how Smallville really, you know, people who watch Smallville and get Smallville, you know, how much it really, you know, touches them. And people just fall in love with the show. It's unlike anything I've ever, you know, with TV wise, I've never, you know, seen it before in my life, just how people really get, you know, they just really draw a lot of inspiration from it. And you know, you get connected to it, you know, it's a feel good story. It's just amazing how much people fall in love with Smallville, and it, you know, just really impacts people in a positive way. At least it has, you know, for me. There's probably not a day that goes by that I don't think of something Smallville related. It might sound weird, but it's true. Like, I'll be driving into town and I'll drive past a truck that's red or something. I'll be like, oh, it's like the, you know, the Kent truck, or, you know, just small little things where I'll hear somebody say something and I'll think of a Smallville episode. Like recently, I heard somebody say, it's a date. And I thought back to the Rush episode where Chloe was under the influence of that parasite.
Yeah, and she's has the lollipop, yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, it's a date. And so there's all these times where stuff like that comes up. And I was like, oh, if I was talking with Zach, he'd know exactly what I'm saying. But
oh, man, I'm right there with you, man. Yeah, so life through the lens of Smallville, all right? Totally. Yeah. Speaking of the Kent Farm, which you visited, that's where our next scene is. We have the party that they're throwing for Chloe, and Jason is there. So where we last left Jason and Clark, they haven't had a scene together since they think, you know, Lana and Jason think Clark is the one that got him fired from the school. So Clark tries to go, like, patch things up with him. He's like, hey, only reason I'm here is because Lana asked me to be, and whether you like it or not, I'm her boyfriend. And before they can kind of continue, the party gets stopped because Lana, Chloe, and Lois are there, and their whole what are they wearing, Corey?
they're wearing their witch outfits, and they seem to wear that the rest of the episode until they wake up out of their witchery.
Well, it's late one night, and then it's like the next early day, so you know it's only a few hours. But yeah. This is it looks like they all just went to Hot Topic and dress goth for an afternoon is what it looks like, right? Jason asks her why she's wearing that. She's like, because it makes me feel sexy. It's like, okay, now we're getting there. Now we're getting to our thirstiness show. But, you know, it's funny. Everybody stops and like, woo, do they show up? Because you think, like, if you're just some person there, you think like, oh, this must be them dressing up for the party or something. And I like how lame they think the party is as well because it...
Yeah, it was interesting how Lois, Lois Witch, she was interested in Clark too.
Well, they love doing that, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, it's not really Lois, so we can kind of tease Lois and Clark together, right? That's like, it's so like obvious they're gonna do that, but it is funny to see.
Yeah.
And I don't know their names either, so it's Chloe Witch, Lois Witch, and Isabel. Sorry.
Oh, I wrote it down. It's Madeline and Brianna.
Okay, which one was Brianna? Was Lois?
No, Madeline was Lois.
Ah.
And then Brianna was Chloe.
All right, you win. Of course. Details guy.
I'm the stats guy.
I'm still going to call him Lois Witch and Chloe Witch. So I love it. So I love what Clark says to her, too. Because she says something to him, she's like, you know, just, oh, hey, you know, just trying to hit on him. And he's like, have you been drinking? to Lois, so.
Yes, I've been drinking some Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I just chugged this glass of red wine. They decide to use their magic powers and take this party up a notch. And by the way, we joked about Clark's birthdays on the show before, and I think Lance and I definitely have. He has like two friends and all this stuff. They throw some party for Chloe. There's like 40 people there. Yeah. It's like, where are these people on Clark's birthdays? You know,
Chloe's much more popular. She, that being the editor of the newspaper will do that.
He's the star of the football team. All right, I'm pointing that out. Anyway, I mean, he wasn't in season two and he had a lame birthday. Season three, his birthday got edited out of the episode. Right, because there's that big party that Lex was planning was supposed to be Clark's surprise birthday party. That's what it was. That's the episode I talked about surprise birthday parties, I think, because Lance was, I'll have to re-listen to that one. See, I know as listeners, you guys are like, what are you talking about? That was like five episodes ago. You don't remember that? A lot of life happens between these episodes, guys. I'm just saying. I don't remember everything that I said on there, but I'm pretty sure Lance and I talked about that because it was supposed to be a surprise party for Clark at Lex's mansion. And there's that one random scene where Lex is walking around with Lana, I think, in Talisman. And there's like these balloons and like, you know, you're like, what is this party? And much like now in season four, where there's all these things that don't have answers. Like, what did Clark give Chloe? We don't know, right? What was that party for? We don't know. The answer is on the DVDs. So
yeah.
Anyway, they turn it really into an episode of Charm because they're like chanting all these things and pointing their fingers and purple energy's coming around. But I will say, as much as I think this episode is just very ill-conceived and just not very good, this is one of the funniest things in Smallville, right? Because the Princeton guy we've been waiting on, you know, he's just the well-to-do, like, kind of suit and tie kind of guy. He's walking to all professionals like, I'm looking for Clark. Like people in their boxers are running by and, you know. And he finds Clark, and Clark is like up on, you know, I'm doing it now. You can't see me, guys, but I'm doing it now.
Waving Great. Your arm.
Yeah. And he's up there in his boxers, like dancing between, you know, Lana Witch and Chloe Witch. Yeah. And he's like, hey, come on in, join the party. Woo! And it's like, what has my show become? Like, I think it's hilarious, but I didn't want to see this in Smallville. What did you think about this, Corey?
Yeah, I was laughing the whole time. Thought it was hilarious, but it got to thinking season four Skin. I was like, Zach, and I know he's going to bring it up, but you didn't. I brought it up.
I zeroed in on the showers because there was so much. You know, maybe I should have done season four shirtless because that would be like every episode. But that's okay. Yeah. I'm going to stick to showers is what I decided. I'm pretty sure there are more coming. So, but yeah, this is what I'm talking about. You would not see this in the first three seasons of Smallville, right? Yeah. We can laugh at it now, but it was magic. I'm sure it was. But anyway, we'll get to that later. But so then we have, you know, we cut to commercials the morning after, right? Clark has a cell phone now. Guys, sometimes he has one, sometimes he doesn't. But he kind of wakes up in the barn, and it's his mom on the other line, and he's like, "Oh yeah, the guy from Princeton. I'm pretty sure I left an impression." So that's funny. But then what is funny too is like these two other teenagers that like get up and run away when they hear him. So that's what it's like at one of these big parties, I guess. I don't know. So
I like this flip cell phone that he had. It really dates the episode.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't think about it because I had a flip phone, so I'm like, okay, yeah. But seriously, if people watch it today, you'd be like, "What, Mike? What is that?"
Yeah. But this was basically what 14 years ago.
Yeah, 14, 15 years ago now. Yeah. So
I mean, there's only one person that I can think of that I see nowadays that has a flip phone, and like every time he pulls it out, we like laugh at him, you know.
Well, I wish I still had. I wish I could still have a flip phone because I would want to turn into a communicator from Star Trek, the original series, and flip it open. So what I really want to do, I might have to customize it. I don't know. I don't know why people don't sell this. They should sell a cell phone case, which is a communicator, right? So I can just slide my iPhone in and then flip it open and then use the iPhone like normal. I would love that, and I'm shocked no one has made that yet. So
yeah, that would be pretty good.
Like, I don't want a Bluetooth cell. I'm like communicator. They sell those, but I want just to slide in the cell phone and use it. Like, you know, anyway, that's my deal. Yeah. When I had a Razor, actually around this time, I had a Razor, and I put a gold plate on the top. So it looked like the Star Trek communicator. Yeah. So anyway, nerd. So getting back to the episode. So the Princeton guy, right, has gone. Clark is in the, BS'd his mom about, oh yeah, I left an impression, whatever. Clark knows that. And by the way, that's a great call. They should have deleted this scene. Like, totally. This is, if you need to make room, nothing is in this scene that's not said in other scenes, right?
Yeah.
So I guess they needed to show Clark waking up with some kind of connective tissue. Maybe that's why they kept it in there, right? Because then we cut to Clark going in the mansion because he's like, oh, no, I messed up with the Prince guy. I should go talk to Lex. He'll solve this problem for me.
Lex, he's got to have Princeton connections.
Yeah. But that's the deal. This is the classic Clark. He goes in. He's like, Lex, I got a problem. Can he fix it for me? Doesn't even notice something is up with Lex. Like, tells his whole spiel about, like, the party and the guy and if he has any connections, right? And it's a good 2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
and then he's done talking, and he finally notices something is wrong with Lex.
Yeah, he finally realizes that Lex is playing the piano, and I thought it was odd, too. It was too much dialogue. You know, normally friends walk into the room and, you know, acknowledge and say, you know, hey, what's up? Or, you know, hi, you know, like the Clark just going in there talking nonstop was ridiculous.
But he can't get him to stop. He can't pull him away. So Clark eventually just pushes the piano away from him.
Yeah.
Because his hands are covered in blood and like, he looks like he hasn't slept because he's been awake that whole time. And because when she made, quote, Alexander play the piano, like, oh, it's just whatever. It's funny that she called him that, I guess. It's Isabel. So anyway, so that breaks the spell, finally, I guess. And he's like, what happened? Lex is like, Lana. So that explains why Clark would have gone to the Talon at this point, which is where Lana lives. So, I mean, that tracks. Like, you wonder why Clark shows up in the next scene. I think that tracks. So,
yeah,
like, good job there. You know, I was all ready to criticize you, but they got me. They thought it through. But this is a good scene. We have a scene from an episode of Supernatural now.
Oh, yeah.
Where Dean Winchester is trying to outwit this witch, and he's going to burn their book, right? It's crazy that he's in the one episode of Smallville with, like, magic and stuff, right? But, you know, it was kind of stupid for him to, like, spell it out to her. Like, oh, I'm guessing you need this book. So if I burned it, it's like, yeah, well, of course she's going to, like, call it back to her, Jason. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And she did. She used her impressive magic, you know, and just took the book right out of his hands. And this is where the cinematography was really cool, where the camera kind of jolted down and up from behind Jason, and it looked really cool. What I really liked about this, where she used her magic and put Jason up against the wall, Kristen Crook really had, I felt like, really good acting with, she looked really like a witch. If you go back and look at that scene, her hand is sticking out and it's all, she has her hand like all gnarly, like an old witch. And she, it was so cool looking. I really liked it.
She does drop the line to Jason, "You have no idea what you're dealing with." So there, we don't have a counter for that. I don't intend to make a counter for that. But I do want to point it out when people say that, because people say that a lot on the show. So this was an effect, because he's like up against the ceiling and stuff. So I'm like, all right, it kind of reminds me of when Clark was getting blasted by the spaceship at the end of season two, where he's like up in the corner of the ceiling. So I give you credit there for the cinematography. I see your point. But then she's about to throw Jason out the window, and Clark super speeds down there and saves him. And I think, because he would have hit the concrete and, I don't know, maybe died.
Yeah.
Hurt a lot.
Probably so, death,
Is this a knockout to keep Clark's secret, though?
Ooh, good question. It seems like yes, because, you know, he is out. Jason is out while Clark catches him.
And if he had not been knocked out, he would have asked, like, Clark, how did you get down here? Because he saw Clark in the room. Like, he knew Clark was there. And if he was awake when Clark caught him, he would have known his secret. So even though he's kind of like, kind of looking around, like, he is incapacitated. Yeah. So that's why I am going to call it. If you agree with me, I'm going to call it plus one.
Plus one, add it up.
So then Clark looks around, you know, for the witches again, and they have burned the barn midnight onto the wall. I mean, that's like, what is this?
I mean, the very first time I saw this episode, I thought maybe Clark did that with his heat vision.
Looks like when he leaves the blur symbol around town in Metropolis, right? Yeah. It was kind of odd. I mean, whatever. Wait, okay. This episode takes place over a longer period of time than I thought.
Yeah, what day is it?
Let's think about it. it was, I assumed it was a Saturday. And I'm just saying, because like Glows was in town or whatever. Could have been a Friday night. I don't know. The party happens at night. And then it's the next morning, right? And then Clark goes around that day to talk to Lex, and then goes right to the Talon. And they're like, the barn, midnight. So his confrontation here with the witches is at midnight. And then he wakes up and it's the next day, right? Because there's light in the barn and stuff. Like when Jason comes and finds him. So this is at least 3 days. I thought, man, they've been wearing those clothes all longer than I thought. I take it all back. Like nothing happened on the second day. Like, because like Clark, he got up. I guess he cleaned up the barn some. I don't know. Goes to Lex, then goes to the Talon, and it's midnight now. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think they thought that one through. How unlike the show to not think that stuff through. But anyway, this confrontation between Clark and the witches is pretty cool, with him using his heat vision, like blasting stuff out. I mean, it's all clearly early 2000s CGI farm equipment, but it was cool to see his using his heat vision. It's kind of like a video game. He's just shooting stuff coming at him, so.
Yeah, and the witches' reactions were, I liked, you know, they had a good reaction to him using his heat vision and blasting all that farm equipment away. I like how they thought he was
a sorcerer.
Sorcerer, yeah.
That would have been a cool name for a Smallville episode. Sorcerer.
It would have been Dr. Fate or something.
Yeah, perfect. Anyway, missed opportunity there, Smallville, for a one word episode title. But they kind of incapacitate Clark, and This is when he tries to call out to Chloe, and this is a good moment. Like you said, this is a good moment here, because you think, right, it's a good misdirect, because you're like, on all these shows, it's like, I know you're deep in there somewhere, right? Because he's like, Chloe, you got to help me. I know you're down in there. And she like looks like he's getting to her, and then she does her witch laugh that you like so much, right, Corey?
Yeah, she does one of the best witch cackles ever on TV. It was every time I hear it, I'm just like, wow, this is amazing.
Well, we do get a plus one for Clark losing his powers, because they cast a spell and his powers just kind of go off into the ether. Huh?
Yeah, it's almost like they blast right past Lana. At first, you know, it seemed like almost she gain some of his powers, but I don't think she did.
Yeah, she seemed pretty excited and pleased what was going on. Just looking at what was going on there. But yeah, you're right. It just kind of zooms on by, and I guess it went to the cave. I guess it went to the crystal. I don't know. We'll talk about that in a second, right? But that is a plus one for Clark losing his power, so that allows them to kind of chain him up, and then they wake him up the next morning, is what I assumed, because there was light coming in, so I guess it was right. The next day. And he's all chained up, this is thirsty stuff going on here, right? And let's just say
this is for the ladies.
even the dialogue here, we're getting really thirsty. We're getting really trashy because he's like, this body I inhabit, you desire it, don't you? Like, come on, like it desires you too. And like, oh my God, here we go.
And I couldn't help think of Allison Mack's problems when she was digging her fingers into his chest.
I specifically was not going to bring that up. So thank you for being like, I wanted to, but I was like, I don't know. But thank you she claws into him, you know, and you can't help, especially this scene. I'm like, this guy is bound. Allison Mack is like leaving a mark on his body. I was like, oh my God. Right.
Well, so, do you want to read in the Smallville?
Why don't you? Yeah, that's a story. I flagged that story and I was like, do I want to go there with this? But since you brought it up, Corey, why don't you pull it up for us? And you read the story from Smallville, The Official Companion, season 4, available wherever books are sold, by Craig Byrne.
Mike Walls explained that there were some effects in the series that were very difficult, even if they looked minor on the screen. One of the toughest gags, actually, was the bloody claw mark down Clark's chest, Walls recalled. We built a soft copper piece that fits Allison's hand, and it had little pipes coming out of it so that we could feed the blood through it from off camera. We worked with her for 2 days on the timing of where her hand would go and when we would push the blood and everything. I thought it turned out really well considering what we went through.
So if you guys doubted that he really had the companion, there it was. He just read from it. That's funny. No, because I flagged that, and I was like, okay, I usually mention trivia like this.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the Allison Mack thing. You know? So there it is. I mean, there it was, guys. Also, there's a whole commentary on the DVDs by Erica Durance, Allison Mack, Kristen Kruick, and Jenna Swark, and maybe one other person. I didn't listen to it for this anyway, but check it out.
I didn't listen to it this time, but I have listened to it in the past, years ago.
I used to try, like in season 2, like I watched Red and Rosetta like 3 times before this, because I was like, all right, I want to watch it for myself, then I'll listen to the commentary, I'll listen to the other commentary, because some of these episodes have like multiple commentaries. Then I decided, you know what, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm just going to watch the episode. I have so much going on already, you know? but I'm glad those commentaries exist, and I wish there were more. I mean, that's the thing about some of these shows, like, it's like, man, like, you have 22 episodes. We could have had commentaries on at least, like, 5 or 6, not just 2 or 3. But I do understand you got to get actors together, scheduling, you know, all that stuff. I understand logistics. But I know there's some shows like Community. That's, like, my favorite comedy of all time. I highly recommend it. No one's mentioned it. I've probably mentioned it on the show many times. Their DVD sets, every single episode has a commentary.
Oh, really?
I think that's great. Wow. Yeah. No, it's a half-hour comedy.
Oh, okay.
But still, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So, anyway, throw that out there.
Yeah, I liked Community. I've only watched I think I watched maybe the half of the first season or the first season, but I thought it was hilarious, but just never got back into it. And
it's on Hulu.
I probably should. Is it on Netflix?
It's on Hulu, just like Smallville. Corey. So anyway, so getting back to the episode, Isabel goes up to him and kisses him. And because she's like, oh, stop, there are easier ways to get what we need, because they want to torture him and find out, you know, where the stones of power are, because they know that he knows, because they, you know, sense his power or something like that, right? So she kisses him, you know, for a while, you know. And then afterward, like, I don't remember the first time I watched this episode, like, what just happened? I mean, rewatching it, I figured it out over time, but I was like, this purple energy comes out of his mouth, and it's Clark's voice, and says, the cave.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's supposed to be Clark telling him what they want to know. Like, that, I don't know how else I could have visualized that, but that did not work for me. That was really cheesy.
Right. I missed it the first time, too. It was one of those things where you have to rewind it, listen to it. You know, at first, it looks like he's exhaling cigarette smoke or something.
So with this information, they go to the cave. They have the book. they open the secret room in the cave, yeah, right, that the Supergirl came out of, that we know where the table is with the other symbols and then, you know, the three slots, you know. And they, I find it real weird how magic interacts with this Kryptonian technology, by the way, because they can just say blah, 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 and the cave opens and they right. go in there.
In Chile.
Yeah, exactly.
Nostradamus, or they kept saying that over and over.
They handle magic so much better when Zatanna shows up, thank goodness. But anyway, they go in there. And like, oh, the stone. And looking at the stone, right? Like, they call it the Stones of Power. To me, it looks like you took, like, one stone and broke it into multiple pieces.
Right.
Because the way they don't look like it was... That looks like a break, not a natural division between all these things. That's just my opinion.
Right. It does kind of look jagged, like it had been broke. Yeah.
And then when you put them together, they become something totally different. But anyway, that's not the... Just seeing it there sitting by itself really draws attention to the fact that it looked like a broken piece of something else. Yeah. But so I had forgotten this part. I actually really liked when they're about to get it and Clark shows up with a shotgun.
Yeah. I was wondering, what was he planning on doing with the shotgun?
Just going to shoot him?
And just hope that their magic powers don't kill him, you know?
It's just, that's a very, he's learned from his dad, right? That's a very Jonathan Kidd's like, you hear the shot? I was like, whoa,
yeah.
Superman with a shotgun. I defy you to find any other piece of media where Superman has a shotgun.
Right. Yeah, I love how the witches just throw the rifle out of, or the shotgun out of his hand.
2 seconds. Yeah. It's like, boom. It's just like, wasn't even factor into it. But I liked how he was thinking, though. You know,
yeah.
So I applaud your thinking there, Clark, because I mean, what else is he has no powers.
Yeah.
What else is he going to do? So, so it's kind of like a Raiders of the Lost Ark moment here, right? Where she gets the power, but it's like too much for her to handle. I guess the stones aren't meant for her. I mean, that's how I interpret it when she grabs it and it like burns her hand. What did you think, Corey?
Yeah, exactly. I kind of at first thought it was more like a burning power, but it was, I mean, like a burner, but it obviously was just, yeah, too much for her to handle. So meant for a being like Clark. So,
yeah. So, I mean, that's cool. But then why are they so concerned about a human getting the knowledge anyway? If this witch couldn't, I don't know. As has been established, this plot line was not very well thought out. But anyway,
I mean, but also, I mean, later in the seasons, people touch the stones and don't get, you know, burnt, or you know, as far as I can think of,
is it because they were just straight up evil? Is that the problem? Well, Isabel herself, does she not get a stone in sacred, right? But she has it in the handkerchief. That's what makes it okay. Are you serious? That's probably what it is.
Yeah, it was like a red handkerchief or you know, so maybe it was, yeah, Kryptonian handkerchief that protected her from it or something.
Yeah. And anyway, Clark grabs it and we see the same. Again, it's the primary colors, right? It's the same thing we saw for Superman when first of all, Superman's primary colors, red. Blue and yellow, and those are the colors we see exit Clark earlier, and they all kind of come back on him and like wrap around him like an X, and I was like, okay, I understand kind of what you're saying here, but it seemed pretty cheap to me.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he touched something from Krypton and it gave him his powers back,
right? Yeah, it's just one of those things, like how do we wrap this episode up quickly, give Clark his power, you know, get his Clark his powers back, you know. I guess we'll have him touch the stone. That'll do it.
Yeah. It's like in Superman 2, the theatrical version, he just picks up the green crystal and suddenly he's Superman again.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this reminded me of, like a crystal restored his powers, right?
Yeah.
It was just, as you said, it's like, well, we got to wrap this thing up. Better give his powers back.
Yeah.
So, because I don't, that crystal, like, that shouldn't just get, that's like if he touched the octagonal disc, I would believe more than that.
Oh yeah,
you know,
definitely.
So.
Yeah, that has more ties to the ship, and
yeah, it's gone right now, so they don't have it right now. So we work with what we got, right? So he gets the powers back. He burns the book with his heat vision. There's a big flash of light, and then everybody's laying on the floor in the cave in a different room. Okay,
oh, is it a different room? I didn't.
Yeah, because think about it, right? When they all wake up, they're in the normal part of the cave.
Okay, I was just thinking that they were kind of just by the table, but they weren't.
No. So funny. And it's so weird because Clark wakes up too. I'm like, why does Clark have to wake up? Like, what they should have done was just they all pass out, and he kind of looks at all three of them, and then and then cuts to, I don't know, they're outside or something. Mm-hmm. But instead, they all get knocked out and blown into the other room, and then because no one knows about that other room but Clark.
Oh, that's why. Yeah,
that's why they had to be out of it. But it makes no sense. I don't know why they knocked Clark out, basically, because he destroyed a magic book. They should all pass out, and that should be it.
Yeah,
just saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. That's a plot hole.
It is.
So.
Yeah. That's also is that a KO to keep Clark secret?
No, because it's the amnesia is what does that, which we have a +3 for amnesia.
Okay.
Because none of them remember anything that happened.
Oh, that's right. Amnesia.
Yeah. So now those witches know, because when Isabel comes back, she knows about Clark.
Yeah.
But her friends don't come back. Sorry.
Mm.
So she was a good friend up to this point. So they're like, what the hell are we wearing? And it's funny, the reaction to what they're wearing.
Yeah.
But, of the three of them, I think Lois looks the best in this goth outfit and hairstyle. I think, you know, Lana has way too much eyeshadow, and for my opinion, and makeup stuff. And Chloe, her hair is just awful. But Lois is looking pretty good in this outfit. I'm just saying, that's all I'll say. Moving on. But anyway.
Yeah, they definitely look like they could have attended like a Halloween party, you know, especially Lana with what you're talking about, like a lot of eyeshadow, mascara, stuff like that. But
yeah, it's like, what, and I thought to myself, is this like a, could this be an episode, movie plot as an episode like Witches of Eastwick or Hocus Pocus? I'm like, no, it's just witches. It's not a specific thing. So I'm not going to make like assign it that. But anyway, those are all things that went through my head with these, like the Hocus Pocus episode or something. Right. So as they're wrapping up though, in the cave, to kind of explain to them, you know, what they're wearing and stuff. We have a, you're not yourself line, don't we, Corey? What is that?
He said to her, you haven't been yourself lately. So that's a tally board.
+1. Yes, it is. Yes, sir. So there we go there. So we got +1 there for the you're not yourself tally. Get our next scene in the Kent farm. Clark goes downstairs. Apparently he overslept because he had a pretty exhausting weekend. Martha's in the kitchen. You know, they're having a good talk. And then Jonathan comes in and he's got a bra.
And it's not Martha's.
No, that's not Martha's. No, I love how John Steiner just kind of like, he's like, yeah, something you want to tell us, son? He just kind of like wiggles it in the air, you know? And he's like, it was magic. And Martha's like, oh, I'm sure it was. I'm like, Martha is always like all about Clark hooking up with people, like throughout this whole series, you know? Yeah. She's just really rooting for her son. It's just funny to see like their complete opposite reactions to this, Jonathan and Martha.
Right. I felt like, I don't know. Do you really think that would have been Martha's reaction?
Absolutely not. It's season 4, yes, but not the Martha from seasons 1 through 3. Am I right?
Possibly. I mean, when he was like what you're saying, he was trying to explain to the Kents about, you know, what happened. And he's like, oh, it was magic. And like you said, Martha replied by saying, oh, I bet it was. I felt like maybe that wasn't in character, but I don't know. I mean, maybe
this whole season is not in character, Corey. I submit to you. But yeah, that's a side effect of season 4, I think, right there. But Jonathan, he thinks it's BS. He's like, Clark, I know this is Smallville. He's like, no, Dad, magic is real. I've seen it, and it can hurt me. And they're like, ooh. So we leave that on an ominous note there.
Yeah.
But still, whose bra is this?
Yeah, and I liked how, you know, in Jinx and in this episode, basically Clark finds out that magic, you know, can hurt him. It's another weakness to kryptonite, other than kryptonite. So it's a cool reveal that he's realizing this, and it helps to have, you know, some other weaknesses for Clark, because, you know, when an individual is too powerful, you know, you need stuff like this to make stories interesting. So.
Well, the problem with magic sometimes, though, is like the rules are so vague. It's like, well, what can't they do? Or what can they do? So that's why they very, very rarely go back to this well, but at least they establish it. And that's what their goal was. So then our next scene is Lex and Lana. Now, this picks up after the deleted scene of Jason and Lana cleaning up the talent after it had been trashed with her attacking him as Isabel. And, you know, they have it's nice to begin with, you know. And then Lex mans up here. Right, because Lana says something about, I can't believe that after everything Jason did for Clark, he went ahead and got him fired. And I was like, well, is Lex going to do the right thing? But it's still early enough in the show where Lex does the right thing. And he says, you know, Clark didn't get Jason fired. I did. And he said he didn't want someone in a, quote, position of authority coercing her into a relationship. I'm like, really, Lex? Like, and even she's like, what are you doing, Lex? And he's like, I'm trying to protect you. And she gets pretty mad at him. And I don't know. What's your take on this whole thing, Corey?
I definitely liked how Lex did man up and admit that, you know, he was the one who got Jason fired. So that was good. I enjoyed that. I like how Lana later goes to Clark and, you know, talks to him about, she realizes that it was him that, you know, didn't get Jason fired, that it was actually Lex.
But did Lex do the right thing here?
Hmm.
I mean, I think he did.
Yeah, I think he did. I mean,
like I've had a problem with that the whole season. Like, for this show to ever think, oh, it's cool, she's dating someone who works at her school. I'm like, oh, that's just against the, they even know, the characters even know. Like, Lana's like, I know it's against school rules, but I'm like, ah, that's a bad look. They should have never done that. Like, they could have found another job in Smallville for Jason to have. I don't know what it could have been. It didn't need to be Clark's football coach. I didn't like that entire plot line. And Lex had his own reasons to do it, because we got Lexana coming. Yeah. Very excited for that. Not. but I'm glad that air has been cleared, because I was like, did they ever talk about this? Is the deleted scene? They ever clear this up? Because we never see Clark and Jason really address it. But I was like, is this going to be one of the three deleted scenes? But it wasn't. And I assume the next scene between this, you know, Lex and Lana scene was going to be the deleted scene with Chloe, Lois, and Clark, where they give her the... give her typewriter. They also establish again that no one remembers anything. And there's some other, it's nice little moments there that just get lost to the cutting room floor. Now, I will say one thing about the end of the Lex and Lana scene, though. She's like, I'm old enough to decide who I want in my life and who I don't. And she like storms off. And it's like, are you saying you want Lex in your life? Because, you know, he's a co-owner of your business. You know, so yeah. But be careful what you say to Lex Luthor, Lana. Yeah. So I'm just saying. So good thing he's in love with you or some crap and let you do whatever he wants. So anyway, come on, Lex. Like, I liked the relationship when it was platonic, but I'm not a fan of the Lex Lana stuff. I assume you're not, Corey. You seem to be a man of good taste.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of that plot, but I understand the direction that they went. You know, with, you know, Lana older and then Lex and Clark's, you know, they were rivals. And so I could see how Lex would also have a little bit of motivation to go after his love, you know, Clark's love. So.
Fair enough. It's the same reason Lex obsesses over Superman. Lex obsesses over Clark. It's kind of how I, you know, in the comics and like Lois and Clark, for example, Lex Luthor likes Lois Lane. So there's a precedent for that kind of stuff. But anyway, we have a last scene here with Clark and Lana in the loft. And it's the first time we've had one of these, a positive one in a while, because her and Clark have not got along all season. And she comes to apologize about stuff, right?
Yeah, that's where briefly I was talking about how it was cool to have Lana apologize to Clark or basically acknowledge that, you know, she realizes that he didn't get Jason fired, that it was Lex. So that was cool. I like that.
It is kind of like Nicodemus at the end where she's like, what did I do? And he was like, oh, you dressed aggressively sexy or something like that. I'm like, I don't know if that's the kind of, are you guys cool enough now to be saying that to her? I don't know, Clark, take it slow. But it is like the whole, whoa, you know, it reminded me of those other episodes where she's lost her memory and done something crazy, right?
Yeah.
But and then she shows him the tattoo. She's like, I should have told you this months ago. And I'm like, yeah, you should have, because he knows more about it than anyone else. Now, he does lie to her and says he doesn't know what it means. I guess he's got to keep his cover. So it's like, oh, even now with him trying to reconcile, he's still going to lie to her. That kind of sucks.
Yeah, you want Clark at that time. It's almost like you want him to open up and say maybe he knows what that means, but he just has too much to hide, you know, too much. You can't, you know, reveal too much. It would just open a can of worms.
And then we cut to Lex in the cave looking at the symbol on the wall. And this was kind of an odd cut to me. I'm like, I'm sure Lex knows about this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I felt like it was an odd way to end the episode. Just him looking at the symbol in the cave.
But that is Spell.
Son, is there maybe a little something you'd like to tell your mother and me?
Where did that come from?
From out in the barn, in the hay.
Clark.
It was magic.
I'm sure it was.
No, I mean, it really was.
Look, I should not have thrown this party without talking to you guys. I know that. But it's the way things spun out of control. It was Lana. Well, it wasn't Lana exactly. She was possessed by a witch who then cast a spell on us, and that's how that happened.
Son, I realize that after all, this is Smallville. But witches and spells and magic?
Dad, magic exists. I saw it. And worse, it can hurt me.
Spell got an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1 out of 5. Ooh. Now, he also gave Jinx a 1 out of 5. So I'm going to read a little bit of his review here to kind of contextualize this. He says in his review, "A lot of people loved last week's episode despite the fact that I gave it a 1. I stand by my review, but I have to say, seeing this episode, I wish I could integer my rating, because that episode and this episode, they're both ones, but this one, it makes Mixie's episode look like an epic. My analogy, Rosetta is to Jinx, as Jinx is to Spell. 1 out of 5 without mercy, and I swear to monkeys, if this doesn't start turning around soon, I won't even be buying the DVD set for this season." That is certainly one point of view on things. So I ask you, Corey, on that note, what would you give Spell on the letter grade scale?
All right. So years ago, I sent you an email, and this is kind of how it got, how we got, you know, talking about this Spell episode and how you get, you know, I'll have to be a guest on it. Because I believe I said, you know, I loved season 4. You know, I was talking about how Transference and Run and, you know, all these episodes are really enjoyable. And I said, yes, even Spell, you know, I like a lot. And so then that's when you replied back and you're like, really, Corey, Spell, you're going to defend that? And as we reviewed this episode and, you know, beforehand doing the studying for it, really breaking it down, I'd have to downgrade it from my initial rating from years ago. And years ago, it was a B minus years ago. And after reviewing this, you know, today and studying for it, you know, there's a lot of, you know, we've critiqued it and pointed out its plus and minuses. And I'm going to have to bring it down to a C plus.
So after all that, I just got you down half letter grade. After all that buildup, that's what we got. All right, fair enough, fair enough. And, you know, we talked it through pretty thoroughly there. I'm going to give it a D. Not a D minus, okay. Not an F. I don't think I'm ever gonna give anything an F because that's too. I mean, these episodes, they exist. You know, if it was like if it was like an incomplete episode or something, maybe that's an F. But you know, you get a passing grade for completing the project, right? So it's gonna get a D. It's down in that lower rung for me. Don't get me wrong. There's fun, right? There's fun to be had here. That's why it's not a D minus. But just conceptually, the witches, the stones of power stuff, the powers going back and forth, the thirstiness of the season, it continues here even without showers. So I'm gonna give it a D. Like this is not a good episode of Smallville, despite it being kind of enjoyable in some aspects.
Yeah, I think that's why I give it a C plus, is because it's fun, it's enjoyable. There's, you know, some humor to it, but I admit it's a little all over the place, you know, a little wonky.
And I think, you know, honestly, if this had been it for the Countess, right, maybe it would be like, okay, well, that was a one-off thing. But the fact that it continues through the season, like you point this and be like, this is where it really got ratcheted up, you know? So, I mean, it's not this episode's fault per se, but like, I think if it was just more of a one-off random one, I'm like, oh, I remember that crazy one with the witches, but it's a whole season of this stuff. And that's what kind of knocks it further down for me. But hey, there is as with any episode of Smallville, there's enjoyment to be had. But I will give the writer, Stephen S. DeKnight, the final word, as he says in the companion. I think Spell succeeds on some levels and fails on others. And of course, the failure I blame completely on myself. So that's very humble. Very humble of Stephen S. DeKnight. He's giving us some great stuff. It's okay for him not to hit home run every time. This was certainly not a home run, but I really enjoyed talking about it with you, Corey. But hey, we got one last order of business. It's the tally board. According to my notes here, we're going to compare tallies. We have a +3 for amnesia count, which brings us to 25. We have a +1 for Clark loses his powers. That brings us to a total of 6 so far. I have a +1 for knockouts to keep Clark secret, because Jason got unconscious when he got thrown out the window there. If he hadn't, he would have a lot of questions to ask Clark. So that brings us to +1 for 23 so far. We have a +3 for our possession count. So that brings us to 5, okay? So over the course, let me point this out, people. Over the course of 3 episodes, we've added this category and now has 5 tallies because of transference, right? And now this one. So that's 5 for that.
Yeah.
And then we have a +1 for you're not yourself, because Clark tells on you haven't been yourself lately. So that brings us to 13 so far. So variations of that line is what we have. So there we have it. And then our Bechdel test, hey, it's actually a pass this week, huh?
It is. Yeah, plenty of conversation between two women.
Leave it to those 17th century witches to pass the Bechdel test for us, let me tell you. So.
Well, did you, maybe I missed it, but did you tally for the episode title said?
I didn't. Did they say spell?
Yeah, they did.
When did they say, so? I was bent to ask you because I kept my ear off for it. I just didn't hear him say spell. When did they say spell?
Yeah, it was in the beginning when Lana was talking about how she had to max out her credit card to, you know, get the spell book.
Oh, spell book. Okay, so spell book is 2 words. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so does that count? Does that count?
You know, because you're the guest, Corey, and you're the stats guy, it's going to count. So we're gonna call it a count. So spell, you can get real meticulous with this stuff, like spell book, spell. Okay, you can say spell and book as 2 different words. So I am going to count it. And that brings us to 29 so far.
Oof.
So well done, Corey. The stats guy brings a stat to my attention I didn't find. Well done. I should expect nothing less. So, hey, man, this is a lot of fun. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
I guess just basically Facebook. Yeah, I'm not real active on Twitter or Facebook, but... I basically got back on the Facebook so I could follow up on Always Hold On to Smallville. So
there it is. Corey, he comments all the time on our Facebook page. So you guys want to communicate with him, that's really the best way.
Yeah, like, I mean, years ago, I thought I deleted my Facebook account, you know, just because I just wasn't using it, or there's times where it was just taking up too much time. And I thought I deleted it. But then, you know, a few months back, I'm like, let me see if I still have this. And I did. And so I'm like, well, I'll just start, you know, following more of the Smallville stuff. So, but yeah, just basically Smallville Facebook under my name, Corey Moore.
Again, thanks, Corey, for all your patronage over the years with your generous donations and memorabilia and whatnot. So you're a valued member of the Always Hold On to Smallville family. And my family, because we have the same last name. No, we're not related. It is funny. It's a common name, you know, Moore, I think.
Yeah, we can pretend to be cousins. We're cousins.
Sure, cousins. All right, well, we'll close the spell book on that one. This conversation is over. And
that's a good one. I like that.
And we'll be back next week talking about Bound. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.
You play beautifully.
Thanks, but I'm afraid I'm a little rusty.